What would a Bluey-based cult be?
Welcome to Australia.
This is a children's cartoon.
Maybe just like stop vomiting on them.
Is there something going on between Chili and Lucky's dad?
How very dare you? I love Americans.
You want bad advice, man? I'll give it out gladly.
I got some good advice for you.
No, you don't.
What's up, everybody? This is Chesco, the speech professor, and this is Bad Advice Wednesdays, the show where myself and a friend try not to ruin your life with bad advice, but we are warning you ahead of time. Remember, do not listen to us. This is meant to be bad, and if you take our advice, that's on you. Legally, that's on you. My guest today is one of my favorite people that I've had the opportunity to get to meet on the interwebs, and that is Melanie Zanetti. And many of you watching this will probably know her as the voice of Chili on your favorite TV show and mine. Even if you don't have kids, I made a viral video about how this everybody should be watching this. I've gotten to know Melanie pretty well over the past few months, but this is my first opportunity to talk to her face to face, as it were, even though we're literally across the world from each other. But I wanted, just in case, you know, there's someone in my audience that is not a Bluey fan and has not kept up your career. I always like to have the first question be like, what would they, if they were to come to your Instagram, for instance, what would they see?
Okay. Hey, everyone. I'm an actor and a voiceover artist. I voice Chili in the cartoon Bluey, who's the mum. And I started my career in theater. So I had years of theater, like contemporary and a lot of Shakespeare's and Shaw's and things like that. And then moved into film and TV. So that's kind of what you'd see. I am only on Instagram. I know all the cool kids are on TikTok, but I am neither cool nor a kid. And quite frankly, I am terrified of the algorithm. I just think it sounds so amazing. And I feel like I will be sucked into its vortex. So I have to be like, I'm like Galadriel. I have to reject the ring because I know it's foul.
Instagram, and this is something that I learned fairly early on, is like the safest place to be because you get the, for whatever reason, how their algorithm works, they actually show the stuff to people that like you. It doesn't feel like they're outrage farming as much. And so if you're only going to be on one place, I think Instagram is if I had to pick one platform to stay on, I would stay there just because.
Just,
yeah, it is usually my most wholesome comment section. So you made a good
feel vindicated my choices. But yeah, it truly terrifies me. And I already spent way too much time on the internet, way more than I want to, because it's a drug and I'm addicted like everyone else.
So you mentioned you used to do theater. Like, so did you always know that acting was something you wanted to get into? Like, when did you know that was a career that you wanted to explore?
Well, I always loved, I think I love stories and make-believe and all of that stuff. I didn't originally think I was going to be an actor. I was like, that's just for really beautiful and really deluded people. And I'm practical and smart. So I left school and started doing a business journalism creative industries degree. I hated it. I was very good at it. It grated on my soul. And then it was my parents who sat me down and said, you really loved acting. You can do anything later. Which is not the usual story.
No, usually, that's absolutely amazing.
I'm very lucky. It's sort of the best gift I've ever been given. So they said that and I cried and I was like, that's very impractical. And then it was like one course left open in Australia and I auditioned and rest is history.
So were you into more like musical theater, like singing, dancing, or were you more into like traditional Shakespearean?
Definitely more traditional. I would love, like, everyone can sing. I haven't been musically theater trained. Everyone can kind of dance. I haven't been musically theater trained, but who knows? But yeah, it was much more, much more traditional, less singy, dancy.
Yeah, because my background's in theater as well. But I went into teaching because, once again, the safer. I do like teaching, so I don't want to. It's not like I was really good at something I hated. I do like it, but. In another life, I probably would have explored that side more. But I've always been obsessed with musical theater. I love musical theater, but I'm definitely
I love it.
A singer. I've actually had a lead in a musical theater production, and it's not good. I'm happy that there's not much of it. It's not available online anywhere. I am not what you would call a natural singer.
Do you think it's sort of magical that I think, you know, we're of a similar-ish age, and that we have this period where there are things that are not online? You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday about, you know, the council culture and all of that kind of thing. And I'm just so glad when I was really in a time where, like, I was forming my ideas and identity, that stuff is not, like, publicly available.
I was in, was it 2006, I think, was when YouTube came out. And like one of my first viral videos, I got 13 people fired from our job. So it was. I have a story. So it's an old video. I'll send it to you. It was a terrible job. Like, none of us were happy. It ended up being a positive thing. Like, none of them were mad at me, but that was like, I was like, okay, I'm done with social media. I'll never be doing any of this again. And I didn't. I stayed away from it until the pandemic.
But you were an early adapter.
I was.
By the sounds. Like, I am borderline Luddite. Look at these. I'm not an early adapter. So I'm fascinated by people who get in there and do all that, you know, so much experimental stuff. Like, a lot of stuff that's happening on TikTok, which, you know, I'll see the couple of weeks later, like, right. And they're old people.
Like real adults.
And like real adults. Right. But I'm so, I don't know. I think Gen Z is amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed and a little bit scared of them.
That's there was like this made up like rivalry between millennials and Gen Z.
Made up. I think they're
every
popular.
Everybody I talk to loves them.
Like in love. Like,
yeah, they're amazing.
I think they're amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. So you were into traditional theater, and how did you make that kind of transition from that into the world of screen acting or voice acting?
Just, it's all sort of honestly happened really organically. I left uni, started doing a theater show the day I left. I'd already auditioned and got the role. And then I had to just start saying no to a bit, because theater takes such big chunks of time. Doesn't pay as well as well, but I had to start just stepping back a bit from that. But I think I landed a film straight after I'd finished this big show, and it just sort of happened quite organically. And the Bluey thing, you know, I was doing voiceovers, and I was using someone's studio, and he said, look, my brother's making this cartoon. You've got a really great voice. Do you want to just track down some demos? It's already cast, but there may be some roles later. And then at the 11th hour, so obviously his brother was Joe Brum creating Bluey, they said, we're looking to change up some of the voices. Do you mind if we just chuck your voice in for the premiere at the Asia Pacific Cartoon Convention? And I was like, yes, I've seen just the animatics. So like 4 frames a minute, really basic, and I'd fall in love. I was like, I want to be part of this. And then they did their due diligence and auditioned for like 3 months, and I was on my agents. I was like, I want this. They're like, you realize this is a kid's cartoon? You realize this? It's like, you don't get it. This is special. This is really special. So I knew, like, this.
So you knew right away, like, even from
right away,
not even supposed to be in there, you're like, this is going to be
right away.
Wow.
I went home. I was like, my heart hurts. This is so beautiful. I've never seen anything like this. It wasn't even a proper episode. I knew. Wow. And actually, just before I did Jimmy Fallon, I was like, to my agents, I was like, who was right about this? They're like, you were right about it.
What are the odds?
It was complete serendipity. So they auditioned for 3 months and then came back and went, you were it. You were right. And a couple of years later, one of the producers said we couldn't find the same warmth in anyone else's voice. So that's why it's this guy.
Voice acting is something I don't know. You know, I'm in Los Angeles. I'm surrounded by actors. I have students that are actors all the time. But voice acting is kind of something that I never have quite gotten really any insight into. What was the audition process like for that show?
Oh, for me, it was chuck my demo down when I was doing a boring voiceover for some state council thing. That was it. It was just, they got a few lines, just whacked them down. They used that. So it, once again, it was one of these, well, I guess this is supposed to happen. With Bluey, they wanted it to be really grounded. And sometimes when you do There's other cartoons which are much more heightened in style. But this is very close. Like, my voice is a little more neutral than Chili's. I kind of lean a little into those vowels. But Dave, who plays Bandit, that's his voice. That is 100% just his voice. And the first time we talked on the phone, I was like, oh, this is you. This is just you. And he's not an actor. He just has a wonderful voice. He's a musician and a composer, and that's sort of how they found him.
So because it's you know, obviously a cartoon character, do you still get recognized? I know your voice is slightly different, but I can still hear the warmness of Chili.
Yeah,
you can
hear
just talking.
Yeah.
You're not. Do you get recognized, or have you been recognized
Never.
Solely from
Never.
Your voice? No, really.
And I love that. I love the like secret anonymity, or where you're when you pass a family and everyone's decked head to toe in bluey gear, and you're like.
They have no idea.
Love it. No idea.
That's amazing. So the show, what did you start recording pre-pandemic, or was it during the pandemic?
Yeah. So we started because it was a good year and a half, I think, or year before America got anything. So it was, I think maybe even end of 2018, I think, is when we started. Definitely pre-pandemic, but I think more of it dropped in the States during pandemic time. So I think that I have had a number of parents say to me, you're the reason we survived. This show is the reason we survived with our children, and didn't want to bleed out my eyes, which is what happens when I watch other things with my kids a million times. So that's lovely. And just to be part of a show that, you know, feels like it's doing some good in the world. I've had parents say to me, like, I had one, a lot of dads go, this has taught me how to play with my kids, and this has taught me, how to be a better parent. I've had more than one teacher say they have children in their class with autism or learning difficulties, and this has taught them how to play with other kids, and it's changed their life at school. I've had a friend, there's an episode, actually, I can't tell you this yet because it hasn't dropped in the States, but we'll have this conversation. Anyway, she felt very, very seen, and she doesn't have kids by an episode. So also just hearing all of these like teenagers who are having bluey parties who are like 14 to 17. So clearly it's bringing joy even if you don't have little kids, and I think that's really magical, just being a force for good in the world.
My daughter was born literally 7 days after my school went into lockdown. So everything was shut down. We brought our daughter home. And normally, you know, you have your family, you have friends coming over, you have people bringing you meals, you at least have some sort of help. But we had Bluey. And it really was genuinely this source of just warmth and just happiness during a really, really hard time. And just to affirm what you were saying, it really was just this something we put on just repeat. I've seen every episode probably close to 50 times, because if not more than that, just because it was just something that kept everyone smiling and kept everyone just focusing on some a happier kind of moments in life.
Oh, I love that.
We're going through.
That's amazing. I've heard so many stories of people and people who don't have kids. Like, I have a friend who, she's like, I'm 36, I'm single and childless. And when I feel sad or like, you know, hungover, or had friends say, you know, I've been going through a depressive moment, and Bluey's really helping. And just love that. Love hearing all of that.
You're a year into recording this show, that you know, you can tell, you can feel already in your bones, this is going to be a big deal. And then the pandemic hits, right? And so what happens with the show? I'm just curious how the showrunners and you all kind of adapted.
Well, here's the great thing about an animation is that, like, I never record with anyone else. So I hadn't met my dog husband. It was like 4 years in, and we met at Madison Square Garden in New York. So because we're all solo, we just had the directors zoom in. You're in a separate room to the tech. So it was actually one of a safer situation. So we didn't actually shut down. Also, Brisbane, where I was, I'd just come back from LA doing something. I came back for a press junket for Bluey, and then that's when everything shut down. It was like end of March. And the state, we all closed the borders for the different states in Australia. So we actually fared pretty well in Queensland, where we make Bluey and where I am. So it wasn't, it was, it could actually just all keep going. The animators, I think, worked from home. I think that was trickier on their end, all of that sort of juggling. Like, there was a few people who come into the office at a time, but we didn't have for quite a while a lot of COVID. It was not what you guys were dealing with. I, you know, because I live half the time in the US, and my friends there were just, it was really tricky, really just wild.
Yeah. To say the least. Not to get too far into it, but yeah.
So you're recording Louis Vandemmingham as you're recording it. Are you, because of how everything, because I feel like it exploded when everything was shut down, were you even like fully aware kind of how big it was getting because of everything else going on?
It had exploded like so quickly in Australia. I think the interesting thing for us was that it transcended cultures, because it's such a quintessential Australian, like the way they speak and the backdrops you're seeing, it's everything is so Australian. I think it was amazing to see how well it transferred to Americans and Brits and really everywhere else in the world, which means, you know, there's a real universality to the way that the stories are written. And that's really Joe, the creator. Like, he writes everything, pretty much every episode. He directs us. He directs the animation. Like, it's really his brainchild. And I think he has this incredible ability of just think the layers with it. Like, it's 7 minutes each episode. And the depth that he gets within these, like, I don't know how to just say it. It's like he's able to distill concepts to its, like, I don't know, like its purest form. And there's the layers that the kids get, and then there's layers that adults get. But then I feel like there's always this, like, something quite deep and profound. And I think that's what, you know, touches people and, you know, makes people cry. And I think there's a real skill to be able to distill something to its most essential without, I don't know, getting too heady or didactic about it.
The ability to kind of just find those moments that we can all see and or that we can feel, that, you know, and even though it's not our experience, it is our experience. Right. And making it, finding the universality, it's an
Absolutely.
Art that not everybody can do. And I think you're right. I think the if that is him figuring that out, man, his mind, kudos to him for being able to do that, because not a lot of people have that ability.
Yeah.
Where there were certain episodes, I'd just be sitting there, you know, and you're tearing up. Just, and I'm like, what is happening? And even I didn't understand. I'm like, this is a children's cartoon. And in my mind, I think the first, like, year of watching it, I was like, oh, I just must be really stressed out from COVID. It must just be, I'm on a razor's edge and something happening. But then afterwards, I'm watching it. I'm like, no, this is beautiful. It's just, he found these beautiful moments that literally even childless people with that have not gone through these parenting things can still see and experience to connect to on a really visceral level.
I agree. And look, even myself, who's recorded and read them and I know what's happening, the first time I saw Sleepy Time, I was a mess. It was an absolute sobbing, snotty mess.
I think when the first time I really brought me to tears, and there's ones I saw that it was like the second or third time bringing me to tears. The first time, just first one through, was Baby Race. And it wasn't until the very end when she said, "You're doing great." And I'm just sitting there like, "You're doing great. We're doing great. It's great."
But it's like what everyone needs to hear. And I think the episodes for parents particularly is you just feel so seen. And the more specific we get with something, you know, the paradox is the more universal it becomes. And I think because there's so much attention paid to the reality of those experiences, and, you know, something like sleepy time, the, you know, how much unseen labor happens with parents with the, through the night, and the learning to sleep in your own bed, and then and the not quite getting there, and just how tricky these times can be, and just having that reflected back in a beautiful, hilarious, you know, short little bite-sized pieces, I think is a winning formula.
It's a story, but it's also the humanity I think all of you bring to these characters through the way you do it. Because there's a lot of well-written scripts out there, right? But if it doesn't come together, and it feels like it's this, your show just came together in this beautiful symphony of emotion and warmth, and at the right time when the world really needed this warmth to be there. I cannot say how much I know myself and other parents have just appreciated what you did when you did, without knowing that it was going to be as needed as it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. None of this was planned. I think one thing I really love about the show is that the parents are fallible. They make mistakes and they apologize for it. And they own an episode I really love is The Dump, where the dad's driving them, and then there's the pictures. He's like, kid, you do paint a lot of pictures, and having to own that he's not actually perfect, but, you know, we're all just trying our best, and modeling that, I think, for parents to show you can, as the parent, apologize and own your stuff. Like, that's actually the teaching we're doing for our children, which I feel like I haven't seen in a cartoon before. Or any kids' media, really. So,
I guess speaking of fallibility, and on a much lighter note, one of the questions that I would be remiss to my audience if I did not ask you, and I have a strong opinion on this question already, but I would like to know from Chili's voice, is there something going on between Chili and Lucky's dad?
Okay. This has been bandied about on the interwebs. And I'm just here to make an official statement that is slanderous, and that, look, Lucky's dad is awesome. He's a great neighbor. But that's where it stops. I'm putting it out there. I don't know if I totally get the official say, look, he's a great dude.
That's what I'm saying. And I was ranking my favorite, like, TV parents of all time, and you both, like, Chili and Bandit were my number one couple. When they started going around, I was like, how dare you?
How very dare you?
So I'm happy to hear from Chili's mouth the definitive answer to that question. There is absolutely nothing going on. It is just correct. Friendship.
You know what? Write your fan fictions, guys, but this is the official line.
Here, last Bluey question. I'm sure that I could honestly talk Bluey all day, but my last one, who is your favorite non-main character in the show, and why is it Muffin?
Look, Muffin is amazing. Muffin is wild and free and treacherous. And she's so amazing. Obviously my favorite characters are my children, Blue and Bingo, joint favorite, of course. But also, like, definitely they are amazing. What other characters do I have a soft spot for Rusty. My little sister, big sister, she's like, I would die for that dog. And Muffin's great. Look, you can't go past, like, so much energy, so many great lines. I feel like there's parents who are like, I want to say my kids are Bluey and Bingo, but I feel the truth.
My youngest is Muffin. She is. That is, if she were a little dog on Bluey, it would be Muffin. And someone said the other day on one of my videos, where I was talking about Bluey, they're like, yeah, but can they get rid of Muffin? I was like, how, once again, how very dare you? That is my daughter you're talking about.
Look, we got to keep it real, guys. This energy for that age is a thing, is a thing. I have two little nieces, and it is one's 2 and 4, which is sort of like chef's kiss age for this show. And just the difference from tiny babies in person, like, they're different people. They're coming out of the womb, different people, which just, you know, is amazing. Humans are amazing.
Well, can I ask you, we have to get the bad advice. Have they realized that their auntie is the most famous dog in the world?
So the younger one, no, Sammy, she's like, yeah, cool. The older one, my brother was like a good year trying to go, Auntie Mel, that's Chili. There's obviously real cognitive dissonance going, no, that's this guy. Who cares? But then there was a moment where he told her again and she just went quiet for about 30 seconds and it was clicking and it happened. And then she just started screaming apparently. And then the next time I saw her, she was real weird with me. She was really like starstruck. And now it's her like, now it's how she's kind of like baller at kindy. And I think when she first said it, I don't think they believed her. And my brother had to be like,
oh, I'm sure you're on. I'm sure she is.
Chili, and they're like,
all right. Well, I think our audience has gotten a pretty good idea of who you are, and I think it's about time we ruin some lives.
I just want to preface this whole section saying, I am someone who like is often paralyzed with indecision about making the right choice, like there's some like universally ordained right choice. So the thought of giving bad advice is both terrifying, but maybe
it's kind of freeing, right?
Like liberating. And then I was thinking, that's kind of the intersection that we're looking for. What is like so scary, but might be really freeing? I'm like, that's the axis that we want to be playing on anyway.
Well, I'm excited.
So I'm very excited.
I'm excited to hear what you say. And there's no wrong answers here. This one was one of my favorite ones I got. She said, some people think my country is imaginary. How do I convince people that Australia is real and that I'm not an actor pretending to be Australian?
Well, I think you don't. I think that's sort of magical that people think you come from an imaginary place. I think you should just keep telling them things about Australia which are true but are just wild. Do you know what a cassowary is? So it's this bird. It's amazing. Think like ostrich, but just slightly more squat and thick, like a thick ostrich. It's got this big bone on its head, like a dinosaur. It's one of the closest things to a dinosaur. It's all blue, bright blue down here, and then has some red. And its feet are like claws, like raptor claws. And it can jump and like split you apart. And it's found in like the rainforest up at the top.
You could be making this up to me right now and I would have literally no way to check.
It's made up. Everyone, look up cassowary if you haven't seen them. They're real and they're really important for these thick rainforests because they can eat fruit that's toxic and then it passes through them and it germinates everything. That might not be real, but it's real. So just keep telling them facts that sound wild about Australia and I think just perpetuate the myth.
You hear all these stories about Australia with like the giant spiders and all these other things where every animal is basically like a couple thousand years pre-evolution, right? Like where you just hear all these stories about Australia. How real are all the rumors about or the things you see online?
It's real. It's real, but you just like, it's part of, you know, your everyday life. And it's not like that close, although I have had a huntsman run across my face at night, so they're not dangerous.
No.
Big as my hand. I was 12 and I had one run across my face. Like this big. I'm not joking. Also, there's like where I live in Australia, there's sort of a rainforesty bush walk. And I was going for a run through it and I went slightly off the path and there was what I thought was like an old bicycle tire that I was about to like parkour off. And just as I was getting close, it raised its head and it was a red-bellied black snake and they are dangerous. So that's just like down the road. There's these other things for this fake place. They're called Iriganji and they're so small. They're in the water up north in the sea and you can't really see them. But if they sting you, you will die within an hour if you don't get help. So you have to wear wetsuits and everything. But
I guess is it more like if you grew up with it, it feels scary to everyone. Because I live in California, yeah. Right? The way everyone talks about earthquakes is like they're terrified, like they're the worst thing in the world. Whereas we grew up here, and it's like it's not a big deal. Like we don't even realize when an earthquake happens.
I think it's just like that. My first earthquake in California, I woke up. It wasn't a big one. It was just some things fell off. Some books fell off the bookshelf, and I sat up and I was like, "Oh, it just happened! A thing I haven't experienced." I was like, "I don't know if this is like clapping. Maybe not a clap. Maybe a go back to sleep moment." Yeah, but it's wild. Just things you're not used to. Yeah, so that's my advice. Just perpetuate the myth that Australia isn't really real.
I like it. And then eventually when they figure it out, they're just going to be... you know what I think she should do? I think she should actually throw in some things that are completely made up so that when they figure out that Australia is real, then they'll have no idea what exactly was made up and not. And she has that in their background.
And they'll be like the blue bugs. Mm-hmm. You know, those massive blue bugs they have there that everyone eats. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Good advice.
What would you buy at a grocery store that would cause the cashier to give you a weird look? Now, they don't give me any context here, so I'm not sure if this is like intentionally they want to give the cashier to look at them odd.
Okay, if you're looking for a look, I think you've got to go with like rope, duct tape, hardcore cleaning, bleach, a shovel, lots of rags, just like really like you're about to kidnap, murder, and bury someone. I reckon that's going to get the look.
Yeah. And I think maybe if you go in with like really kind of bloodstained clothing while you're doing it,
yes,
really you got to play it up.
Right? Yeah. Really distressed, move very fast, keep looking over your shoulder, I think is also good.
And then it depends how important is this to you to get this reaction, because you may also have to deal with police afterwards, which may or may not be the best situation. Make sure it's beet juice that you use.
Yes, you're like, look, I've been juicing, I've been cleaning, I've been gardening. This is all paraphernalia for these things. Yeah, I think that's great advice.
I think it's great. And there, now my audience cannot claim we don't give good advice on this channel, right?
Exactly.
How do I get my friends to stop having kids?
Don't show them Bluey.
Right.
doing all the hardest things about having kids to them. Maybe just like start vomiting on them. I don't know, like turn up at their house, break in the middle of the night, like wake them up, ask for a drink of water, steal all their money. What else? Just like cry, throw yourself on the floor when you're out with them in public and just scream at them.
I feel like if it depends how bad they want to commit to this as well, I feel like they may need to have a kid of their own to get their kids to stop, and then really kind of make sure that your kid is the worst, right?
The absolute terror.
And I think that might be the way. Idea.
Get that kid to ruin their house. Get them to draw on the walls.
Oh, yeah. It's encouraged. You got to encourage it at home, and you're going to have to deal with having to raise a child. But at the end of the day, you're going to accomplish.
Like, are you going to commit or are you going to commit, right? I think the have the child is the best bet.
I think we solved it. I think it's great. Yeah, I think that's going to be.
You're welcome.
Start a cult? Nice short question.
Hard yes.
Yeah.
Always. Mm-hmm. Always start a cult. Like I think cults can sort of fall, if you do it right, into that tax exempt religious bracket. So I don't know. Like I just make everything go through the cult. And keep that tax. That's what we're here for. Really, you know, let's not put it back into society. Let's not, you know, look after people. Let's start a cult.
I think
that's what we're doing.
Are we doing this? Are we starting a cult? No.
Right.
Is this happening right now? Is this? Oh my God. Do I need to cut this out? Like, is this
right?
The cult of Bluey. I mean, you already have this fan base there. I don't know what
you got.
What would a Bluey based cult be?
Oh gosh, what would it be?
I feel like, because I feel
I
like
don't I think I, that I, would be a terrible play.
I don't. I'm saying I think this might be
like it would just be centered around creative play,
right?
And some good snacks, yeah. and you know, I don't know, generally not being awful to each other, and maybe lots of dogs.
Yeah,
sound terrible.
That doesn't sound bad at all. Lots, so many dogs. Yeah, I'm deleting this. This is we're gonna cut this because this is
dangerous ground.
This is important, and this is gonna happen because when it happens, I need to make sure that nobody steals this idea before we
exactly.
make
How this happen. Is this bad advice?
All right, well, Melanie, this has been fantastic. I am so happy that I actually got a chance to talk to you socially, kind of one on one. And I'm starting something new. But I want to end each show now, giving our guests an opportunity to share some actual good advice, right? Something that you've received in your life that either you kind of carry with you, and it could be about, you know, it could be about your career, it could be about life, it could be about happiness, whatever you want. But to end the show on a really kind of more positive note, what other than starting a cult, what is something that either has been shared with you that you've learned that you would like to share with people listening?
Oh, okay, a couple of things. First one's short. I think we should all be aiming to delight our 5 and 85-year-old. I think what would make that part, those parts of us delighted, and you know, I say that more than happy, because happiness feels sort of, I don't know, a little thin and intangible, but delight feels like the thing that lights us up inside. So that's what I'm constant. Whenever there's big decisions to make, I'm like, how will I feel when I'm 85? And how does 5-year-old me feel about this? And that can be some good indicators. The other one was I saw on a talk that Dr. Brené Brown gave, and it was about, it's called The Sweaty Creative, and it's about critics and being in the arena. So she says that there is only one guarantee if you are putting work out into the world, if you're creating something, is that you'll get your ass kicked. And then you have to decide if, you know, creativity and courage are things you value, then you'll do it anyway. And everyone is allowed their own opinion, totally. But if the person giving that opinion is not also in the arena getting their ass kicked, if they're not also, you know, covered with sweat and blood and daring greatly, maybe that opinion doesn't matter that much. And that I found really useful. Because, you know, anyone who's in a public space, which is most of us these days, you know.
It's true. It's almost impossible. It's hard not to be in one.
Exactly. And create something and, you know, put things that are, you know, usually imperfect out into the world. Just having people who also understand what's that like and taking constructive criticism from them, and maybe not the people in the cheat seats who are just going, this is how the dude in there could have done it better. I think the other main thing is just be kind. You know, when I was younger, I think I was so much more enthralled with people who were sharp and witty, and of course talent's very attractive, but the older I get, the more and more I just go, being kind. And I don't mean nice. I think many people have made this distinction. Nice feels superficial and the thing that you do to toe the line to be accepted and liked by society, whereas kind feels much more full-bodied and connected to truth and good boundaries and all of that kind of thing. And I have to say, I came across your work because it came up in my Explore, and then I started investigating and looking at your stories. And it was obviously you were funny and smart and deconstructing things in a really great way, but it was really how kind you were in the way you were doing it, and how thoughtful towards people who are marginalized in society. And that's why I'm so glad we became friends.
Go on. I honestly cannot imagine ending the show on a more positive note than that. To everyone listening, go follow Melanie Zanetti on Instagram, and hopefully you'll get a glimpse of the wonderful person that I'm very happy to now consider a friend of mine as well. Thank you all for listening. And remember, don't listen to us. Don't do the bad. Don't listen to the good stuff at the end. Don't do the bad stuff.
This has been a delight. Thank you.
And that was Bad Advice on a Wednesday. If you enjoyed today's show, please like, please subscribe, share it with your friends, drop a 5-star review. You can always support us financially at patreon.com/thespeechprof. All links of everything we talked about will be available in the show notes. And most importantly, remember, this is intended to be bad advice. Please do not listen to anything we said. I'm sorry.
Okay, dope rhyme slinger, good advice giver. Listen for a second, let me try and paint a picture. Raises coming up and you want your check bigger. Moving quiet just won't get you seen. Your boss a clicker,